The lights are on red. We're away.
Welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, May 23rd, 2008, and this is episode number 129. I am Bob Hayes, your host, here today bringing you the best in motorcycle road racing as we do every week. So we got a pretty good show going on this week. We're going to talk about Le Mans, the French Grand Prix there that took place at Le Mans MotoGP last weekend. Jules and I had a call about that and chatted a long while about the race and just some general goings-on in the world of MotoGP. It was a good call. I think you're going to enjoy that. Before we get to that, of course, we do have a few things to take care of. First things I want to do is send a big shout-out thank you to Peter Reed, who was very kind and donated to MotoGPOD, helping to pay the internet bills, the Skype bills, the beer bills, all those sort of bills that you tend to accrue when you do a podcast. And I really appreciate that, Peter. Thank you very much for doing that for me. You went to the MotoGPOD.com website there, and there's a link on the left side if you'd like to donate. So, again, thanks very much, Peter. That was good stuff. And let's see. Some news. We haven't been doing a lot of news lately, so I kind of want to get back in that habit. So first item is, unfortunately, bad news. So this is not a good thing at all, but I feel that it is newsworthy and something that we should mention. And motorcyclist Robert Dunlop, brother of the famous or legendary Joey Dunlop, has died at the age of 47. Robert Dunlop suffered severe chest injuries in a crash in Thursday's practice session at the Northwest 200, which takes place in Ireland. It's part of the real road racing series, something of the lead up to the Isle of Man TT, motorcycle racing on actual country roads, close down the roads and go out and do a motorcycle race. So this is very, very sad. Accident happened in the 250cc qualifying session in County Antrim. Dunlop's brother Joey, a legendary figure in British motorcycle circles, died while racing in Estonia in 2000. Robert Dunlop, who holds the record for the most wins at the Northwest 200 meeting with 15 wins, sustained serious injuries in a crash at the Isle of Man TT in 1994, but recovered and resumed his career. He retired from racing in 2004, but returned to action the following year. However, on last Thursday, he and the other riders were traveling at speeds of about 160 miles an hour as they approached the Mathers cross section of the course in Portrush, and Dunlop's bike appeared to seize and he went over the handlebars. He was rushed to the Causeway Hospital in nearby Colleran, where he died from his injuries shortly after 10 p.m. Clerk of the course, Mervyn White, said he was devastated by the death. Our thoughts and prayers are with Robert's family, and we extend our deepest sympathies to his wife Louise, children William, Daniel, and Michael and wider family circle, White said. And we here at MotoGPOD also do the same. This big, big tragedy that Robert Dunlop has passed away, and it's very, very sad news. Like I said, brother of legendary Joey Dunlop, which is not how Robert should be remembered. Robert should be remembered as, in his own right, a fantastic motorcycle racer, one of the brave souls that goes out there and risks his life, literally risks his life, to entertain us. And, it may be fulfilling some sort of personal need to go out there and do what he does. But those of us that don't do it certainly find it very, very entertaining to watch. And it's always very sad when the sport claims a victim like this. So on to some slightly less depressing news. This one's kind of interesting. This is about Michael Schumacher. Michael Schumacher's motorcycle road racing exploits struck a hitch at the weekend when he crashed in his first appearance in German superbikes. The seven-time Formula One world champion has dabbled with two-wheeled racing since retiring from Formula One, although he is adamant that he is only racing bikes for his own entertainment and has no plans to start a second career. He was racing under a pseudonym, Marcel Niederhausen, however, word got out that he'd be competing in the Achersleben round of the IDM Superbike Series, which I believe is like International Deutsche Meisterbikenschaft or Meister, something along those lines, basically International German Superbike Series. And a large crowd duly gathered to watch him come from 37th on the grid. He qualified 37th on the grid, finished 28th in the first race. However, he crashed out of 21st place in race number two. And Schumacher said, "There was a classic example of how to learn the hard way. I had just planned an attack on the bike in front, and I had chosen quite a narrow gap to get a good exit curve. Then my footrest hitched onto the curb, and I slid off with the bike. He escaped injuries and shrugged off the incident. Nothing really came of it, just a few scratches to the bike's exterior and probably a few good pictures for the photographers who were at the circuit. The sad thing was that I couldn't finish the race, but all in all, it was great fun." And the Åkersleben race was billed as a one-off, with Schumacher not offering any details of when he might next appear in a motorcycle race. However, I think that you can count on Michael Schumacher continuing the motorcycle thing. He seems to enjoy them. He's had some test rides with Ducati, a variety of different things that he gets to do simply from the basis that he is, you know, 7-time Formula One world champion, Michael Schumacher, and all that sort of thing. That kind of gets you a lot of mileage, is being able to ride a Ducati Desmo Sedici and all that sort of good stuff. So it's kind of neat, and it's unfortunate that he crashed out. All right, let's see what else we got going on. We've got a call coming up here with Jules that we're going to start that in just a second. I do want to give you a quick heads up. We had a few technical issues going on with that call, so there's a little bit of background noise, a little bit more than I normally like, and we're going to work on that and make sure it doesn't happen again next time. However, the call is still totally listenable and still some good stuff. Jules and I had a good time doing that, and I hope that you will have a good time listening to it. And a quick note that I will not be in town next week. I've got my Navy Reserve training, so I'll be gone next week. Jules is going to do a show for us, so next week, show will be presented by Jules Cheesick, a.k.a. Pop Monkey, and I think that's going to be another good show. He's been doing quite a few shows for me the past couple of weeks here while I've been taking care of some work commitments and all that sort of thing. So now I've got a Navy thing going on, and Jules is going to take care of the show. So, enough blathering on. Why don't we get on with the call with Jules, and let's jump right into it. All right, we got Jules on the phone. How are you doing this morning, Jules?
I'm doing good, Bob. Good morning.
Good morning to you, too. We're doing a morning call today. Our schedules didn't line up for the evening call, so we're powered by the delightful coffee bean this morning rather than the delectable brew made of barley and hops. So, all right, why don't we talk a little bit about the Grand Prix of France at Le Mans?
Okay, before we start, I wanted to just follow up on the last time we talked about what happens when you go off track, and you know, sometimes we see marshals helping out riders, sometimes we don't, and we said we would look at these rules, and so I did went and looked at these rules, and I just wanted to follow up on those. So there's a section called behavior during practice and race. It's a section 121. And paragraph 4 says that any repairs or adjustments along the racetrack must be made by the rider working alone with absolutely no outside assistance. The marshals may assist the rider to the extent of helping him to lift the machine and holding it whilst any repairs or adjustments are made. The marshal may then assist him to restart the machine.
Presumably by pushing it, which is only going to be the only way they can do it.
So they are able to do that.
Okay. That's been something that's a little bit confused me.
I know. It's a little bit of an ambiguous paragraph.
And I know that the announcers have commented before, you know, this is just sort of over time, the little bits and pieces you collect from their comments and stuff. And I was always a little confused. But actually, that kind of clarifies it, even though, like you say, it is a little ambiguous where there's some sort of room for play. You know what I mean?
I like the fact that as long as it's just a rider, then they can make repairs. Like maybe they could carry a toolbox, you know, and the,
yeah, exactly.
A spare couple levers, you know. I broke a clutch lever. I'll just, you know, let me just put this new one on.
Right, take the seat off. Get into the little, you know, compartment under the seat for their stuff. Yeah, yeah. Hopkins probably would have liked to have a new chain.
Ooh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute.
There's a. And while I was reading the rules, there was one that popped up that I thought was interesting because I didn't realize this was true. This is in section 118, which is the start procedure section. And paragraph 15 says, if after the start of the race a rider stalls his machine, then he may be assisted by being pushed along the track until the engine starts. If after a reasonable period the engine does not start, then the rider will be pushed into the pit lane where his mechanics may provide assistance. And this is the interesting bit. Or where the rider may change machine.
Hmm. That is interesting.
That's only on the first lap. The moment that the leader finishes the first lap, you can no longer change the machine.
Okay. I didn't even know about
that.
That
is really interesting, huh? You can actually change the machine after the start of the race. So there is this one tiny moment during which you can do it, that first minute or so of racing.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty interesting.
It's similar to the AMA issue that bit Duhamel on the Daytona 200. There was vagaries of that. You know, you can change your motorcycle at certain times, and I don't even remember the full details of that, but other than the Duhamel was very upset.
Right.
Because he basically went out and raced like half a race at Daytona and then found out that he wasn't allowed to.
Oops. So.
All right. So other stuff that happened in the race, I found this one to be one of the more satisfying and enjoyable races in the MotoGP class in a while. I thought it was good stuff all along.
It was a great race. What was that specifically you found so interesting?
Some of the passes and stuff. I mean,
there was amazing racing, and it was one of those, you know, really nail biting moments with the weather, because we did have a race declared wet on lap 10, I believe. And then it was that, you know, like, oh, should we go in? Should we not go in? And actually, you know, obviously because of that rule, there was some things that happened that normally would not have been allowed.
Melandri ended up going in the pits to change machines.
Right.
And coming out on presumably full wets or shallow wets, or there's still that little vagueness going on of exactly what they're going to call the tires nowadays.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it wasn't really ever revealed whether he actually went in because of a mechanical issue or because he was just going to take a big risk and say, okay, you know what, I'm not running very well. I'm going to come in, get those rain, intermediates or whatever. Actually, it was full wets, wasn't it?
I think it was, yeah.
And I'm going to just hope that it just turns into a downpour, and then maybe I'll be the first guy out there on these tires.
Right, and because if you didn't watch the full race or read the, you know, a lot of the details, Melandri had some kind of issue at the start, and he basically didn't get off for a long time.
Like 30 seconds or something like that.
Yeah.
He was way, way, way behind.
Yeah.
And then, of course...
I actually had thought he'd retired at some point in the race. I think the announcer said something about that, because I had him picked for first DNF, and I thought he was out because, you know, they don't show you and they don't mention it and everything, so it was quite a while. And he eventually got lapped.
Right. Yeah.
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 Which is humiliating. And Ducati actually
did not get a point this weekend. So, unlike his teammate, he did get a point.
Yes, he did manage to...
Finish 15th.
Actually, yeah, okay, they don't show him on the last lap, but yeah, he did finish, he got a point. Mm-hmm. And let's talk a little bit about Stoner's issue. I mean, Stoner was having a good race. The Ducati, you can see it has the drive out of some corners, but not all corners.
Right.
But you could watch that bike just, you know, closing up or extending a gap or whatever, and then the four cylinders will pick it up on the straight. But it's not like that in every corner. And so this must be some of the vagaries of the electronics and all of that that we're running into, kind of a maybe depending upon what gear they're in that corner or something along those lines, where it seems
the thing chooses. I mean, remember how Ducati had the system where every single corner was mapped in the computers. It's calculating the distance between corners and actually throwing different fuel maps on some corners.
Right. So, do you think that it wasn't quite tuned as well as it should have been, or
it could be, or maybe just it threw something on there that was just made it harder for him to control the drive out or something. I don't know. I mean, but obviously, you know, ever since reading about that, I've been just thinking about like how much of that is, you know, pre-race planning, and how much of it is just that the bike and the tires and the chassis in that particular combination have you know, issues with some of the, you know, a particular degree of corner, for example, or of camber or whatever.
Right. That makes sense, a certain theory. And I mean, he had the garbage truck is outside. He had he was definitely having better luck in the first part of the race, which we've somewhat seen so far this season with the Ducati, you know, and in Stoner in general. You know, if he can get out and break away, then he's sort of happier at the front, and he's difficult to pass, and he makes life very difficult for anyone that's trying to pass him.
Wow, was he really defending his line? It was amazing.
It was awesome. There was some great stuff, and I mean, There was one specific pass fairly early in the race with Stoner, and I believe it was Pedrosa. Do you remember the one I was talking about?
Yes, yeah, totally.
Or, yeah, yeah. And it was I just, you know, one of those jumping up and down. They had some good aerials in this race. They've aerials and onboards. The director, whoever was directing in France, used a lot of onboards, more onboards than we've been typically seeing. Something was wrong with the whole system, because a lot of times it was jerky and jumpy and it would flake out.
Yep, especially on Pedrosa bikes.
Yeah, exactly. And there were some really good aerial shots. And thank you very much, Speed, for putting up the gigantic graphic that's like a fake website across the bottom of the TV and covering up half the race. I enjoyed that. That was cool. On those aerial shots, you know, thanks. Well, yet again, Speed really? TV making me happy. But back to Ducati, back to Stoner. Stoner was having, you know, a reasonably good race. Then all of a sudden he slows up and he puts his arm up, some kind of mechanical issue. Seemed like he sort of got it going again.
Well, what's really horrible is where it happened. It happened just after he passed the finish line in the pit lane entrance, so he had to go all the way around the track with that issue.
Right. And did you get details on what it was?
So Ducati has yesterday said that they found out what went wrong with the motor, but they would not release any details. So I'm sure that they're keeping it very, very tight, and they're not going to tell us. But it was something with the motor went wrong, and he was basically unable to run at full speed. And by the time he went all the way around the track, he was pushing the bike in the pit lane. And
yeah.
And you could tell that there's a point where he's not allowed to have any assistance from his mechanics, and his mechanic was just standing there waiting, like, okay, get here, and then they started helping him push the bike. Probably at the point where you get past the line where the speed limit is enforced.
Something like that, yeah. See, and watching him push the bike, he's, you know, pushing it with one leg and everything. It was actually kind of painful.
Oh, my God.
And I thought it was a little surprising. The pit lane announcer says they're trying to get his second machine started now. And this is after he's, you know, right there. And it was like, oh, no. Another disaster. And I was a little surprised they didn't have the machine already warming up, because a lot of the other teams did have their bikes being warmed up because of the tires.
Point, I think the rain was actually starting to level up. I mean, go away. So maybe they missed that chance.
Yeah, possibly. He still had to come out on different tires. He exactly. couldn't come out on slicks.
There was some on the Eurosport feed. They were talking about, like, yes. This is he's taking advantage of a situation that maybe not quite the spirit of the rule, being that he's changing the bike for the tires, not for an engine failure. However, in the flag to flag race situation, that is the rule, and he didn't break any rules. He just, you know,
took advantage of it,
and I mean, he didn't even really pay off, but he did get to go back out there.
Yeah, although there was, again, there was some sort of question that he kind of gave a look to the team of, like, you know, why am I bothering to go out? And they sort of kind of gave him the go out signal, you know, which...
Well, yeah, I mean, you never know. Somebody might crash, somebody's chain might come off or something, and...
Exactly, and every point is important. And, yeah. You know, Stoner may not have realized exactly, you know, at that point, he might not have known exactly what position he had in the race and all of that sort of thing, and he's kind of thinking... You know, he may not have realized that he was very close to getting a point.
Right.
And he ended up, I don't think he did get a point, did he? He finished 16th.
No, he finished 16th,
yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. But, you know, had he had like another lap or something like that, he probably would have passed Melandri, which is sad in its own way.
Yeah.
and he was almost lapped a second time. Actually, I think he was lapped a second time.
Yeah.
So, because he'd lost a lap already, and then
final corner of the final lap, you just see him getting passed in the bottom of the screen by
Valentino
Pedrosa. No, Pedrosa. This is already after Valentino passed it. Like, the camera kind of started pulling back, and then there you see Stoner and Pedrosa passing him. Past the finish line, so he didn't officially get double lap, but, you know, still.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Still, it had to be it was a very difficult weekend. Ooh, for
poor guy.
For, uh, stoner, and that's sad to see. You know who's somebody who had a spectacular weekend, although it was probably a painful one, was Lorenzo. I had him, let's see, he qualified, what, fifth on the grid, had mm-hmm. a difficult practice in qualifying with more offs. There were worries that he was going to screw up his ankles even worse and this and that.
Yeah, he had some bad offs, and he also had a bad start.
Right, he had a terrible start because he was down like 10th yeah. On the first lap yeah. and dropped back all the way to 11th on the second lap. So, but about two-thirds of the way or so through the race, he decided to really turn it on, and he was racing a good race. And that I think he managed to take advantage of the weather conditions a little bit as well. Not exactly sure why it was benefiting him. Maybe he just sort of wasn't as sort of affected by the weather, wasn't sort of taking it as gingerly as some of the other riders were, or something like that.
You also noticed that Rossi, that's the time when it was that little bit of spatter of rain. That's the time when he actually gained most of his. At one point, he had a 10-second lead until the very end, where he started to really just relax his pace.
Right.
Most of that 10-second lead he actually got during the time when it was raining, and everybody was saying, wow, this really sucks for Rossi, because he's the one that has to check the dry line first, since he's leading the race. But he actually, and I think that they're both extremely good at judging grip, and that gives him, obviously in this kind of conditions, gives him incredible advantages.
Right, because this was the classic difficult conditions. You know, it wasn't yeah. really wet, but it certainly wasn't dry.
Yeah.
And it was difficult to judge, but they both seemed to do it well. I mean, Yamaha, if Ducati had a terrible weekend, Yamaha had a fantastic weekend, because Edwards was finished third. And another guy who had a great race, all around. You know, he qualified on the front row, showing, as again, that he's a really good qualifier, second spot. And, other than that, I mean, he got off to a good start. He was in contention there right in the first corner and all that sort of thing, and just sort of managed to hold his position. Like he said in his podium interview, that, you know, it was a difficult race. He just couldn't quite find the speed to, you know, to pass some of these guys and whatnot when he did. But he managed to hold on to it and everything, and came up from. He was down in fourth at one point, and actually for most of the race, and then came up to third and finished third. So an all Yamaha podium, good stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah. And going back to QP, he actually just missed out on the Yamaha's fifth pole in the row, because he got slowed down by Melandri.
Oh, did he? I didn't realize that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was actually kind of a funny thing that happened. Frustrating for him. He was on his final lap before the time ran out, and he already made up some time on Pedrosa's time.
Mm-hmm.
And he was surely going to get the pole, but then he came across, I think it was in I3. Melandri was going in, he was on the racing line and going slow. Actually, Edwards, I have a quote here. Edwards, he said, "There are too many guys sitting there just farting around. We're out there risking ourselves to the limit, and you've got some jackass sitting there in the middle of the track. I like Melandri. We get along good. But just look around, you know? Especially in the last minute of the qualifying. That's just stupid. Good job it didn't happen in Texas. I carry a gun there." So more great sound bites from Edwards.
Yes, a classic Edwards sound bite. Wow. Yeah, he missed pole by... 0.127 of a second. So, you know, not...
Right, which is from the previous lap.
Okay. So the lap, his final lap then was
spoiled.
Affected enough then.
Yeah.
That'd be, okay. Not even his fastest lap. Wow. Interesting. And, Pedrosa had the fast lap of the race, new record and all of that, but still, you know, couldn't quite put the whole race all the way together. Wasn't linking lap after lap after lap fantastically like Rossi was, and even like... Edwards and to a point Lorenzo were
Definitely Lorenzo. I mean, Lorenzo came through like crazy passing
right, but
guys.
His first part of his race wasn't quite as exhilarating. That's what I was kind of, you know, he came through big time. Yeah,
I think you're right about him taking advantage of the trickier situation.
Oh, Do you think that means that he's a bit more of a maybe a natural or something like that? I mean, what are we seeing here with Lorenzo?
I don't know. I'll tell you one thing. I'm about to become, I think, a target for Lorenzo fans because I'm going to tell you something. I think that Lorenzo is totally overdoing and over-dramatizing his injury.
Mm. Wow.
And yeah, here's my theory on this. I think that it totally fits his character, right? He's Mr. Drama. The Spanish are like all about drama, and that whole display after the race when he was getting off and they were putting him in a chair and then, in a wheelchair and then they were they had the chair in the on the podium. I don't know. It just started to seem to me like, this is really opportune time for him to really play up the fact that, okay, he didn't win, but let's make this a great story. I mean, this is a guy who like has a biography at age 20 and I don't know. I'm starting to doubt just how painful this injury is. I know I'm going to get a lot of hate mail for this, but something just didn't jive with me when I was watching that.
I think it's a valid theory. I didn't realize about the wheelchair because I only watched it on speed and I saw the cut up version. I need to watch these races online. It's just
they had a guy carry him off the bike and carrying him in, like his little son or whatever, and then they put a chair out on the podium and he sat in the chair. I don't know, I remember when Pedrosa had that problem with his foot in Sepang and finished second, and was it third? I forget. Actually, no, I think it was third. A couple of years ago, and he just hobbled onto the podium, and it was Rossi that put the chair out there as kind of a goofing around thing. So I mean, maybe it's part of Florenzo's goofing around, but I have a feeling that he's playing this up for all it's worth.
A little bit of theatrics, a little bit of drama. Yeah, that makes a certain amount of sense. So,
but nevertheless, he's having an amazing season, and thanks to him and then Edwards' result this weekend, we get three Yamahas in pole, and Yamaha is just kicking butt. If it wasn't for that incident, so the only Yamaha rider who didn't. Actually, he didn't even finish at all. Was Toseland? He had a little bit of an incident with Dovizioso. He hit the back of Dovizioso's bike and ended up crashing.
Right. Did you hear Dovizioso's comments after the race?
Yeah. He was like, the guy should know better.
Right. And it's basically Toseland needs to relax a little bit. It's kind of what it boiled down to. Is that he's too aggressive.
Yeah, I mean, Dovey was kind of funny about that.
Yeah, it was. It was a little weird. And the whole thing with Toseland, I never actually saw it or saw any photos or anything like that.
They did show a very quick clip of it from above. And it just looked like Toseland was running a little hot and Dovey was breaking Toseland just hit the back of it, and it's like Dovey was actually pretty lucky not to go down with him, which is really sucked.
Yeah, and they both I think it affected Dovizioso quite a bit because the timing screen, it sounded like he the announcers were like, where'd they go, kind of a sort of a thing, right. Where did he check his lap progression?
He dropped
He lost quite a few places from it. All of a sudden. So yeah, all right, and then let's see, going down the order.
Well, let's just mention, the winner of the race. The winner of the race was Valentino Rossi, and
we actually didn't talk about him, did we?
Yeah,
that one guy.
I think he was. This was one of the best races, in recent years. I think he kind of broke the duck, in China, but this was a really dominant victory. Obviously, he had a huge runaway race, and at one point was like over 10 seconds ahead of Pedrosa. And then at the end of the race, he had that great celebration, which obviously has been in the works for quite a while. I think since the beginning of the year, or even last year,
Because this was his 90th victory.
Yeah, the 90th victory was coming up, and he talked to Angel Nieto about this. So he basically surpassed, or actually matched Angel Nieto's 90 Grand Prix wins with this win in Le Mans. And so Angel Nieto is at all these races because he's an announcer for one of the Spanish stations. So he agreed that, yes, if it happens, he's going to throw in some special made leathers, which said, "Bravo, Valentino," and hop on the bike with Valet and do a lap around.
So, yeah, that victory celebration, again, didn't get shown on speed. So,
really?
No.
Oh, man, it was great. It was. So did you get to see it at all?
No, because, like I said, I didn't watch the full-on race online. I need to find more time and do stuff like that. I don't know, it's just been insanely busy lately.
So, basically, you know, the usual, like, the usual pre-Valentino Rossi, something's going to happen, see if people surrounded him. And then when they parted, there was a rider wearing black leathers that just said, "Bravo, Valentino 90. And then and the guy was wearing, you know, a white helmet that one of the commentators recognized. Hey, that's Angel Nieto's old helmet. And Rossi got on, so Angel Nieto took the controls of the Yamaha, and Rossi hopped on the back of it, and they took a little victory round together with a big flag.
Rossi was holding a big flag. Actually even rode the bike around.
Oh, yeah.
He wasn't a passenger.
It was excellent. It was totally excellent. And then Rossi had the big flag that said 90 plus 90. So 180. Yeah. And then he was frantically pointing his finger, like, yeah, it's the guy, like at Nieto. That's the man.
Yeah.
It was very, very cool. And then as soon as they got into Parc Fermé, Nieto took off his helmet and interviewed him for his station. So
that is cool stuff. Great. Now there's the rider with the most Grand Prix victories ever is Giacomo Agostino,
right?
Who's got something like, what, 122, 132, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Rossi's actually about to catch him in the Premier class. He needs four more wins, and then he'll tie Agostini's Premier class wins.
Right, it's going
to be hard for him to catch. He's going to have to stick around for a while to catch the overall
Grand Prix, exactly. Yeah. Because that 120 odd is the sum of all classes, and you know, this is when you talk statistics, any sport like this, and you know, obviously baseball's the really big one, but you kind of always have to have a little asterisk that a lot of his career for Giacomo Agostino, he was racing multiple classes on the same weekend. You know, he'd go out on the 350s.
But then again, they also only had like eight to 10 rounds a year. So
that's true too.
It's kind of weird. It's just a milestone. It doesn't really like compare the riders, in my opinion.
No, I agree. Definitely not. I mean, there's so many differences. Everything is so different. The tracks, the machinery.
Yeah. Yeah. You watch some of those old races and how gingerly these riders had to go around corners. Because there was just no grip in the tires, and the suspension was so, you know,
bad.
Simple and primitive that, you know, you just watch these riders go around the track, and it's like, man, I could totally pass those guys. Yeah, I could pass them on, like, a modern bike. You know, I mean, these things were insanely difficult to ride. So anyway, yeah, so that was the victory celebration. I thought that was very classy. And it was very, very cool of Angel Nieto to take part.
So, yes, that was good stuff to see all of that. And
Pedrosa, by the way, said that he did have a little bit of a fade. He was definitely up there in the battle. And he said he had some problems with the tires and some braking problems. And I think that's all that he said. And I'm guessing that he actually had problems with the front tire. And that affected his braking. Maybe he wasn't feeling quite grippy enough or something, and he didn't want to, that he couldn't be as aggressive on the brakes as he could be.
And I wonder if that was a weather related or what,
tire choice related? Yeah. Maybe, I don't know. It was an interesting race for them because it was the conditions were basically like nothing that they dealt with all weekend. Right. So,
yeah. All right. Well, kind of since we're sort of jumping around, but we're kind of continuing down our finishing order because we've had first through fourth was Rossi, Lorenzo, Edwards, Pedrosa.
I wanted to just one more thing about Colin because I just his quotes are just so quotable. This is what he said about the race. So first of all, he was not too happy about third. He really 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 wanted to win this particular race, and he even went as far as predicting that he was going to win to Pontcharrol before the race started. The Tech 3 boss, he promised he would bring him home a victory. But Pontcharrol was extremely excited about just having being on the podium. I mean, this is a Tech 3 first. So, I don't know if it's the first, but definitely in a long, long time.
Right.
And but anyway, this is he said something really funny. He goes. Yeah, I'm an experienced rider, and those guys are fighting for the world title while I'm in fifth, so I wasn't going to do anything stupid. You've got to play our cards right, and that's how I got Pedrosa. He checked up a little bit, and I thought, screw it. I'm not going to take out a Yamaha, but I'll take a few more risks with a Honda. Obviously referring to the fact that when Rossi and Lorenzo passed him, he was a little more... Not as aggressive.
Right, not as aggressive defending his line, exactly. Yep. Yeah, yeah. Edwards is a good guy.
He did say that he couldn't do anything about Rossi, who came through, and this is another great quote, like a cowboy with his guns blazing. Oh, man.
Yeah, we are getting into the sort of the meat of the season with the classic European tracks. You know, we've got Mugello coming up, and that's going to be an exciting one. And then, yeah, so there's some good stuff coming up soon, that's for sure.
So keep going down the order.
Keep going down the finishing, finishing order. Christopher Mühlen, Suzuki. I mean, that was another stellar performance.
He loves this track though. You could tell him. I mean, I think he was in contention for the podium for much of the race. He really looked at like he had the pace to get there. And I think he probably, ironically, actually suffered during the rainy portion, which is what everybody was like, oh, if it rains, Mühlen's going to win.
Yeah,
so it was kind of ironic that his pace dropped off a little bit during that time.
Right, but yeah, there was quite a group. You know, they were close. It wasn't a procession on this race like it has been. Although actually, typically, once you're starting to talk about the battle for third, fourth, fifth, and stuff, it hasn't been a progression. It's only a procession, is the word I need.
Right.
It's only we've been seeing that with the leaders, but not so much at this race. So yeah, Vermeulen had a good race coming up from eighth on the grid, finishing fifth. Didn't get to see enough of them. I mean, the action at the front of the race was so good that the cameras were largely focused a little farther up, so we only saw them occasionally down there. But yep. Enough to know that it was a good race. A lot of overheads, like I said, a lot of aerial shots that were good stuff.
And I never really got to understand exactly what changed at the track, because they threw out all the old records because the track has changed this year, and I was looking at those aerials, and it definitely they didn't do anything dramatic, but if anybody out there knows exactly what was changed, that'd be pretty cool. I actually should have done a little research before. I'm sure it's out there on the net somewhere what part of the track got changed.
Mm-hmm.
It changed enough that they invalidated the old records.
Yeah, exactly, which is always, it does make you wonder what they did. You know, it could be something fairly small, because I'm looking at it and the little map here, and I don't see anything super obvious, but Andrea Dovizioso, good race, finishing sixth spot.
Considering that the little incident with Tozant, he recovered nicely after that.
Indeed, second fastest Honda on the the team Scott JIR, the formerly Konica Minolta nursing home for MotoGP riders team, and he said, he did great. I mean, like you said, considering that incident with Toseland, qualified 10th, came up, finished 6th. I mean, for these guys, that's a spectacular performance.
Yep.
So, Loris Capirossi finished 7th there. Loris was quite a bit up. I thought, he was sort of closer to the pack through portions of the race, and he kind of faded there at the end a little bit in time-wise. Not so much position-wise, but dropped off on some time.
It's good to see the Suzukis in the top 10 again, both of them.
This is true, exactly. I mean, Suzuki's getting things right, and it's looking pretty good for them, you know. So, yeah, this is a good thing. I was just going to move on to Hayden, eighth spot. Oh, boy.
Unhappy. We're going to talk about Nikki. He's unhappy.
Yeah, don't blame him. Qualified sixth, not as, you know, in second row.
He even mentioned that while he did qualify sixth, he was very unhappy about it. I mean, it was like kind of like a gift in a way, because some of the other riders didn't qualify ahead of him, basically.
Gavin Emmett mentioned it. He says this says a lot for the depth of the field, of the talent, when you have, you know, riders of this caliber battling for, you know, sixth and seventh.
Right.
It just says a lot about the depth of the field. And that's actually true. That's a telling comment. And I'm still standing behind. We had an email interchange going on a few days ago, you and I and a listener, who's, unfortunately, my name escapes me. Do you remember who that was? And
remind me what we were talking about?
Well, I was being sort of somewhat taken to task for saying that Hayden, maybe I somewhat might have misspoke when I said it, but, you know, that he kind of fell into his championships that he has won. And I don't mean it that way. That sounds overly harsh, and I'm not saying that it's, you know, that Hayden didn't deserve to win his championships, both in MotoGP and AMA or anything like that. Hayden is a spectacular rider, but I think that also part of being a champion is that you're the guy that's out there being consistent and putting in, you know, lap after lap of good performance when the guys that are great are having a bad year.
Is this Cesar Partita?
Partita? Was it Cesar? That we talked about with that?
Cesar Partita. Well, I don't remember actually responding to this email, but he did say something about... he was just talking about the...
Yeah, no, unfortunately I cleaned up my email, so I don't even have that one handy here. I'd have to dig around and find it. But in a nutshell, basically, and I apologize to the listener that sent me this that I can't remember your name, but you know, it was like, hey, I don't think you're giving Hayden enough credit. And I sort of clarified my view that I had said that I had said that Hayden only has his job because, you know, he's an American that's such a great spokesman and a good company guy. And that's not the only reason. It is a whole factor of things, but it certainly helps. Hayden is, Hayden's a great rider. He really is. He's a good rider. He deserves his ride, but there's still, you know, I think it's a sum of many different things. The fact that he is such an excellent spokesman for Honda and a good team player and et cetera, it all sort of combines together for him to have a ride on the Honda factory team, because he's not Valentino Rossi. He's not a guy that can, he's just not that good. There we go. You know, I mean, how else am I going to say it? You know, he's super good, but not super great. How's that sound?
Okay.
I mean, I know what I'm trying to say. I just can't sort of spit it out here because, you know, when Hayden won the AMA Superbike Championship, Mladen was having a crappy year. And I mean, Mladen and Suzuki have dominated Superbike in the AMA for so long. And, you know, and Hayden, you know, just went out there. He did a fantastic job. Yes. But combined with that, Mladen wasn't having a good year. In 2006, when Hayden won the MotoGP championship, Hayden had a very good year. But as well as the sort of balancing act on the seesaw, Rossi did not have a very good year. So Hayden was able to, you know, go out there, do super well consistently over and over and take the championship. And I'm not saying that Hayden didn't deserve the championship. I am just saying that it's a combination of many factors that worked in there, and that's why he won the championship. And somewhat, I think it's premature to say that with Stoner was a little bit of the same. I think pound for pound, Stoner might be a better rider than Hayden, at least on the machinery that they're on now. But, and I'll probably get mail about that.
Oh yeah.
But, you know, last year Ducati got it right, and Soner, you know, was able to take advantage of that, and Yamaha and Honda certainly didn't get it right, and Yamaha was in a kind of a year going on. But this year, I think, you know, Yamaha and to an extent Honda have somewhat closed that gap. You know, the Ducati doesn't have the power advantage that we really saw last year on the straights, where it just was just powering past the things. I mean, it simply doesn't. I mean, the four cylinders are catching up now at the end of the straight. The horsepower is outweighing the torque.
Absolutely. And,
yeah.
I mean, so, Yamaha is the Ducati of 2008.
Yeah. And you know, and this also goes back to the whole factor of how much it is a team effort. That, you know, when Valentino Rossi or Casey Stoner or Nicky Hayden, when they win the world championship, it wasn't just that guy.
Right.
It is a team effort. You know, we've heard
it's the tire guys, it's the actual team mechanics, it's like the, you know, it's the other teams, you know, your teammate. I mean, actually, one of the funny things about this race was that over all the years that Colin was Rossi's teammate, this in this race was where he gave him the most help. If you think about it, because by passing Pedrosa, he actually let him take the lead in the championship.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. You know?
he wasn't doing that as a teammate thing, but it was just, I just found it kind of interesting.
Somewhat ironic that, yeah. And it wasn't like I think Colin, other than, you know, he made his comment that he might not have defended his line quite as aggressively against a Honda or against a Yamaha as he would against a Honda. Sure. But, there was nothing like any sort of team orders of you're not allowed to pass the factory guys or anything. I don't think.
No.
Edwards wanted to get out there and pass these guys.
Yeah.
So, all right, there's my seems to be a fairly regular Nicky Hayden bashing session. And believe me when I tell you this, everybody out there, it's not a Hayden bashing session. I'm a big Hayden fan. I'm just saying what I think as far as his thing. And Hayden takes a lot of negative comments in the forums and whatnot from us armchair quarterbacks or whatever we are you know, that he doesn't deserve his ride. And I don't think that. I think he does deserve his ride. I just think he deserves it for different reasons than a guy like Rossi deserves his ride.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Ninth spot, RDP. So Randy Depunier managed to pick up three spots on his LCR Honda and finished ninth, which is, how is that for his season as far as his finishing positions? Because I think it's right up there with his... it matches his performance in Qatar. Mm-hmm. So finished ninth in Qatar and ninth in France, and otherwise a fairly uneventful season.
Yeah, he actually gained a bunch of positions right in the very first slow corner, the first time they went through the chicane, because he cut across it and he gained quite a few positions. And then he had to, of course, give them back because the rules state that you have to be on the racetrack. If you go off the racetrack, you're welcome to come back in, but then you have to go back into the place where you were before you went off road,
right?
And then you if you don't, then you get a drive through, which is actually interesting because I remember at the Monza race, was it, or maybe was it Assen, World Superbike, that happened a lot. And
Assen, yeah,
it was at Assen, right?
And it was at Monza. Monza
was
sorry.
It Monza,
yeah,
and I forget who was it. Was it? It was one of the Suzuki riders who went off a couple of times and then came back on right in front of Biaggi, but because he was not going as fast when he came out of the runoff area, he ended up slowing Biaggi down, which must have been really frustrating for Max. And then I started thinking, you know, that incident in Assen in 2006 with Nicky
Colin.
And Colin,
mm-hmm.
Nicky cut across the track at those last two corners in that chicane. So that's kind of interesting. Does the fact that Colin crashed like negate that rule, or that, you know? I mean, he left the track, he came back on, he gained a place.
Yeah, but then Colin crashed. So yeah, that's a good point. Hadn't thought of that. And also, was that enough of a factor? I mean, Colin didn't say anything that I recall that, you know, Hayden made me crash.
But no. But I'm not saying that he caused the crash. I'm just saying that, like, going off the track should not gain you a position. And I guess the Colin crash made it irrelevant.
Yeah. It's kind of a somewhat unusual situation, and when you're not gonna. I mean, what are they gonna do? Say, you know, give him another lap or something? Because, you know, there's really no way to have a rule about that one.
Right.
So, all right, 10th spot, Shinya Nakano. Not doing too badly down there for...
That's pretty much the standard finishing spot for Nakano this year.
Yes, he seems to have done it three times in a row so far. And yeah, exactly. He's kind of dancing around 9th, 10th, and all that sort of thing. The Honda satellite teams are definitely... that's where they're at. And that sort
really,
of...
Really, if you think about it, if it wasn't for Pedrosa and Dovizioso, actually... Honda's kind of slow.
Sucking hind tit.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not exactly. And could that be because, you know, of Honda putting all their eggs in the Pedrosa basket and designing the bike for Pedrosa, et cetera, et cetera? Yeah, probably. You know, it's a little hard to say, and it's got to be frustrating for a guy like Hayden and for the other, you know, the guys that are fairly tall that are having issues in one way or the other on this bike.
Yep.
Because I think actually Dovizioso is he's not small like Pedrosa. So I mean many of these other Honda riders are, you know, fairly big, and Honda's done that in the past. I've said this before too. They've done that. They did it in the 250cc class to Porto a few years ago, and really he was quite butthurt about it. One guy that we're not going to get to in the finishing classification, now that we finished out the top 10, I don't even want to go through the last six, or should we talk a little bit about Hopper? Yeah. An unusual, I mean, one, Ducati having mechanical issues clearly with Stoner and possibly with Melandri on his start. We didn't get a lot of clarification either of what happened with Melandri on the start, if it was, you know, totally his bad or some sort of machine malfunction-y thing or whatever, but then Stoner had his problem, and that's unusual enough. But I saw something I'd never seen before, and that was Hopkins breaking a chain. And, you know, you saw that chain snaking across the track, and Hopkins was obviously quite upset about it. And
he was really lucky that it didn't, you know, get jammed in there. That's a very scary proposition, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That could have been, yeah, he was very lucky on that one.
Also, that nobody hit it.
Actually, I think somebody did sort of barely touch it and sort of send it skittering across the track more, because I was wondering about that. I was watching when you saw it there, and it was like, wow, is that going to cause another problem?
Right.
Or maybe barely missed it. So, yeah, that was unusual in itself. Like I said, not something you're going to see at every race as far as happening.
And what position was Hopper in at that point?
It was on lap 13, and Hopper was – where was he? Lap chart here. He was in – looks like 9th, yes.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Nope, wrong number.
It was 7th, no?
It wasn't 9th. It was higher. He was higher up than that. Wait a minute. No, it was on lap... it wasn't lap 13. It was lap...
17, I think.
Yeah, lap 17. Sorry about that. My bad. And he was in 7th spot.
Right.
I misread the not classified thing in it. It's because he was behind 12 laps. Not right. That he had finished 12 laps.
That's really a shame, because he was doing fairly well, and
he was moving up the order. He was having a good race,
mm-hmm.
And he'd picked up a few positions, and looked to be, you know, doing quite well. And I had, when you watch the race on speed, you don't get the entire pre-race show and all of that sort of thing. And they showed the portion of the grid walk that was, you know, Hopkins. And what they've done in the past on speed is when they show an American and they sort of concentrate so much on that section of the grid walk, it's like, you know, he's going to be on the podium or something. So I was half expecting Hopkins to be finishing, you know, possibly on the podium. And when he's down there, you know, almost two thirds of the way through the race in 7th spot, and Valentino had such a large gap and everything, I was like almost half wondering, it's like, is there going to be some colossal three-rider crash, and all of a sudden, you know. And but it turns out that the reason that they showed us Hopkins, I think, was that, you know, because he had the chain issue, and it was just sort of a chance to focus on one of the Americans in the grid walk. They, like I said, speed cuts the races up so much, and, you know, they don't put the
whole... Did they show Colin?
No, and that's the weird thing, is I don't know why they didn't concentrate on Colin, because, you know, he podiumed, but who knows, maybe... that portion of the actual full on feed wasn't that great. I don't, you know.
Weird. Okay.
Yeah. So I think that about covers our race. Let's,
where are we at? The other thing I wanted to mention is Ant West. He is now on my shit list. He made some comments after the race that I just thought were, just amazing coming from him. He was angry, and there was some kind of issue with his Kawasaki and the tires, and he said that there was a setup issue and that caused him to have lack of grip, but he was furious and he demanded an explanation of why it had happened, and I was like thinking to myself, you know.
Wow.
Nobody's like furious and demanding these horrible results he's had for the last seven races. He's not in a position to start like mouthing off at his team all of a sudden. I'm losing like all. I never really had that much respect for the guy to start with. He's always just struck me as a whiner, and like listening to his interviews is like the pit of despair or something. You know, he's just so. You know, miserable, and he's in such a funk. I think it's time for him to leave the series and go back to one of the lower classes where he was really competitive. Every time he was being interviewed, even in those classes, and things didn't go well, it just like the world was collapsing. The guy just needs to get a Lighten different up. Perspective and enjoy the sport. I mean.
Yeah, I think Kawasaki ought to give the seat to Roger Lee Hayden. They'd have two American riders if they did that, which in such an international series is a little, you know, a little odd, I suppose. But I think Roger Lee Hayden could do a lot more with that motorcycle than Ant West is doing.
Yeah. And, it's time for him to go. I mean, he's not going to suddenly have a breakthrough at this point. I mean, he's sounding like Biaggi in his last season, and the crew didn't want to work with Biaggi anymore, and this, I'm sure that his crew is like, whatever, dude.
It's possibly true, and it shows Hopkins' strengths. I mean, Hopkins is a good rider. He's had issues, and I have my own personal feelings about Hopkins. One of them being that I think he came to MotoGP too soon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and he shouldn't have left Suzuki. But we talked about that one, you know, when they're waving around that much money, it's hard to resist. It does show his strength compared to Ant West that, you know, Hopkins is able to go out there and basically sort of do okay, you know, make the best of it.
And if something goes wrong, he just beats up the bike.
Yeah, exactly. I think Hopkins had a right to be upset with the broken chain thing, because that's such a, you know, an unusual thing. You know, granted, you know, you don't need to kick the crap out of the bike or whatever, which I didn't see him do that, but he, you know, there was some sort of
referring to that Suzuki incident a couple of years ago.
Yes, exactly, the famous kicking. But with the Kawasaki, you know, there was some fist pounding into palms sort of a thing, and I mean, that's it's frustrating,
but I absolutely doubt that he went back and said, hey, why did you guys screw up my chain? It was more like he was just frustrated, like the bike failed, and that's why he was pissed. But he wasn't going to go back there and be pissed at any particular person or anything like that. I think that he realizes that, like, he suffered an extremely bizarre component failure. Like, we don't see chains coming off in these races. These are not clipped chains. They're links. So it's very unusual for them to come off. He just got very unlucky.
One of those things. It's just one of those things. Yeah. So all right. World Championship. How are we at? This race shook things up a little bit because it put our boy Valentino Rossi in the lead of the World Championship.
So here's some trivia for you. When was the last time that Valentino Rossi was in the lead of the World Championship?
Oh boy. It had to be... He didn't. He wasn't in the lead last year at all, was he?
He was in the lead in Jerez the second round.
Okay.
And then in the third race in Turkey, he came in 10th, and that was when he had these really bad tire problems, and he barely made it back. And it's actually amazing that he managed to finish 10th, and then he never regained the lead again. Snow just kept pulling away.
And so the last time he was in the lead of a championship series was round 2 of 2007.
Yeah. and the previous time that he was in the lead was obviously in Estoril just before the Valencia race. But before that, he hasn't been in the lead since 2005. So, you know, he must be pretty excited about this.
I would think so. He certainly seemed on his podium interview, and hopefully we're going to keep seeing him up there. I'd like to see Valentino win another championship, be honest with you. I'd also like to see this one as close as it is, because five races in and he's only got a 3-point lead, and Lorenzo and Pedrosa are tied on points at 94.
They're only
and
three
again
points behind.
Tied on results. What's that?
They're only 3 points behind. Yeah, they're tied on results. My wife was bringing that point up. It's like, look at this. Lorenzo finished fourth in China and Pedrosa was second, and now they reversed again. So it's like those guys are just neck and neck in
neck
every
and
possible
neck.
Way.
Exactly. They've each got one win, two seconds, one third, and one fourth. And,
so I guess Lorenzo is ahead of Pedrosa now, because remember we found out that the
most recent
the
result,
is,
right?
The most recent result right. is the tiebreaker.
I was just going to bring that up, since and it looks like, you know, this is the second time this season we've had to demonstrate that rule, and you know, maybe it'll continue through the season, and that's good stuff.
That is.
So,
but I do think, by the way, that Stoner is out of the championship running now. I know it's very early, but he's now 41 points behind Valentino and 38 points behind Lorenzo and Pedrosa. Now, if this was 41 points behind Valentino Rossi, say 41 points behind a rider, that wouldn't be an insurmountable thing to overcome, right? Because you can always count on some rider having a bad race. But three riders that are 38 points, at least 38 points ahead of him, that starts to be an almost impossible task, because you can't count on all three riders, you know, having a bad race. And
they'd really have to have two bad races, at least.
Yeah, he'd have to be finishing really well. So the only other possibility is that he wins like at least eight races or nine races in order to be able to. And assuming that those guys, you know, finish second and third and whatever, which I'm sure is going to happen, he's going to have to win a lot of the next, you know, what do we have left? 13 races? He's going to have to win like at least half of them, if not more.
Huh. Yeah, and that's actually a good point. You're right. Just on straight numbers, 13 races, 41-point gap. But considering the class that he's in here with those three guys that are ahead of him, it would take – yeah, they would need
– it's going to be hard. Like last week we were talking about he was not out of it and he's going to bounce back. But this was a real setback. This was real setback.
Horrible. Right.
It's the first time he had a mechanical with Ducati. It's the first time he hasn't scored points with Ducati. So, I think actually he's no longer... I don't think he's going to be a championship contender, I'm sad to say.
Yeah, I think that's actually a fair assumption. And like you say, it is a little early in the season to make that assumption, but I think your logic is very valid. Because even if all of a sudden, you know, who knows, injury or whatever, you know, Lorenzo's injuries are not over-dramatized or something, and he starts having a disastrous season, you've still got Valentino and Pedrosa to contend with, and you're right.
Yep.
So, interesting thought. Interesting stuff. And that puts our, you know, well, Colin Edwards is in fifth with 47 points, you know, is even farther out of the money. But I think that fifth on the Tech 3 team and all of that, I think Colin's doing a damn fine job.
For a satellite?
I agree. Especially, I mean, you know, Tech 3, well, they were saddled with the Dunlops, but still, this is testament to Yamaha's kind of commitment to the entire effort. And I think they've upped the ante a little bit. We've heard that basically they're picking up Collins' tab. I remember reading that somewhere, and allowing Tech 3, and I think they're probably getting their seems like there's more involvement. There's more something going on to make sure that Tech 3 does well. Does that sound logical?
I think that's great. I think that's great.
Oh, it's awesome.
I think that the factories should be supporting the satellite teams. I mean, they get very valuable data from these guys. So,
mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. You know. Yeah, and yes, Loris Capirossi in six on the Suzuki. Another team I'd like to see do real well, and another team I'd like to see spawn a satellite effort, like the rumors that have been going around of the Schwantz and Spies, and you know, maybe someone else, right. Possible satellite team. That would be awesome. And I don't know. We probably don't really need to go down the entire list. We'll touch on Nikki Hayden again, just to sort of give him a little limelight going on. Nikki Hayden in seventh spot, 37 points. He's 60 points behind Valentino Rossi, only five races in.
Yeah,
that's a lot.
Yeah.
So yeah, and it is a little disappointing to see so many of these other very, very talented guys, especially Melandri and Vermeulen and whatnot. Where, and you look at the points that they've got, and it's just, you know, well, Vermeulen has two races with no points, and you know, he finished fourth here, but fifth. But he, it's not, you know, it's kind of sad. You know what I'm saying? And again, I think it must be testimony to the depth of the field, the talent. You have to be so good, and things have to be so right to be doing well in MotoGP this year. And yeah. And the slightest misstep or problem or whatever can really have serious consequences.
Look at Toseland. I mean, he was in fifth in the standings too.
Yes, exactly. Toseland got off to a rocketing start for the season, and I was really, you know, it was like, wow, you know, awesome stuff. And we sort of haven't seen as much from him the past couple of races. Not, you know, I don't think he's lousy or anything like that. It's just that, you know, it wasn't coming together quite as well as it was at Qatar and Spain, which, like we discussed, Qatar and Jerez are both somewhat anomalies through the season anyway, right, as far as right. the tracks.
Let's see. Mugello is going to be interesting because Honda is bringing their pneumatic valve engine. It's not going to be ridden by either Hayden or Pedrosa because they probably don't want to risk a DNF with those riders.
Hayden probably said, I ain't riding it.
And it's going to be ridden by Tadej Okada, who's been, you know, he's done some GP racing in the past. He's been with the HRC forever. So he's going to be a wild card, and he's going to ride the Honda there. And I think that I don't think that Hayden and Pedrosa are going to even touch the bike until the test at Catalunya, after the Catalunya race. So I think they're just trying to get the bike out there in race conditions and see how it performs.
Yeah, that makes
sense.
It'll
be interesting to see, you know, like if they get their top speed up, because definitely Honda is slower than the Yamahas or Ducatis. And the other thing that's interesting is that Ducati is already working on their GP9 bike.
Not just working on it, but
they're testing. They're testing.
Yeah, testing. Testing
right.
It. Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure that all the teams are working on the next year's bike, but
sure.
But they're testing it with their official test riders. So that was right. That was interesting. And I actually think that the arrival of the pneumatic valve Honda is going to hurt Lorenzo, because his big rival Danny Pedrosa might actually be on a bike that can do some damage to him on the straights where he hasn't been able to do so right now. So Danny's going to do everything to beat Lorenzo. So that's going to be interesting. But it's going to be, I think we won't see that bike in the hands of the main riders until maybe like Assen or something.
Possibly.
They do want to get it out there as soon as possible because we've got three fast tracks coming up: Mugello, Catalunya, Assen. And then the other thing that I just heard just a great rumor, and I'm sure it's just a rumor and a silly story, but I just wanted to like wrap up with this. This comes from a source very close to the Tavuglia gang, which is Rossi's like posse over in Italy. I was asked not to reveal who gave me this information, like making it sound like it's a really reliable source. It's kind of like I heard my buddy say that he hung out with the buddy of one of the gang. But the story goes that this is back to 2006 Valencia. Rossi has a really terrible start. He gets on pole. And he has a really terrible start and has a very un-Rossi-like crash out of seventh place on, I don't remember, like the fourth or fifth lap. Has to get back on the bike, loses the championship because he can't get to... All he needed to do was finish eighth and he couldn't do it.
Right.
And the story is that after setting pole, he went out and partied like a madman with these buddies of his until 3 or 4 in the morning, and he was completely hungover on the starting grid, and that's why his reaction time was crap, and that's why he had such an unusual get off. And like, you know, it's a funny story. It's just hard to believe that would be Rossi would let his guard down that much, but.
Actually, I find it extremely easy to believe.
I mean, if you think about it, like if you look at what happened that race, it really like kind of
makes perfect sense. It makes a lot of sense. And I think actually it fits in. I think that's a very believable urban legend, rumor, whatever the hell it is, because we've heard, you know, Rossi's a night owl. He's mm-hmm. also kind of the party animal guy. And, you know, he's the classic thing for Rossi is showing up at the very last minute or even late to, you know, test sessions and practice and all that sort of thing.
Interviews.
Interviews. Yes. Everything. And, so he's a bit of a flake. Yeah. And, I can kind of totally see that because here you are, you're Valentino Rossi. It's like, all I have to do is finish eighth. You know, how could I not?
I could do this with one hand tied behind my back. And, you know, he was also, think about what he achieved that season too. He was so far behind. He had so many mishaps, and he himself had written off the championship, and then he managed to pull it back. And then Estoril handed him that because Pedrosa took out Hayden. He handed him the lead.
Right.
He came in there with a big lead. Well, not a big lead, but enough of a lead that all he had to do was finish eighth and win mm-hmm. the championship.
Maybe I think that would have been a safe assumption. And yeah, exactly. yeah, that makes a lot of sense actually. And. Not to start, you know, Hayden slamming session again, but it plays into my argument that Hayden's kind of the right guy at the right time sort of a thing, and that, you know, Rossi's misfortune or foolishness or whatever you want to call it was Hayden's gain.
Right.
And, yeah. Yeah. So, well, all right. Enough Hayden bashing for one day. why don't we call it a day, because I got to get out of here, and I think you got to get started on your day.
Yep.
And it was been great. It's nice, always nice talking to you, Jules, and appreciate the call.
Okay, man. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
And that's going to do it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you very much for downloading it. Jules and I had a good time doing the call. Hopefully you had a good time listening to it as well. Like I said, won't be here next week. Jules is going to take over again and do a show for us. And what else we got going on? MotoGP and World Superbike are not going to be racing this weekend, the 24th, 20th of May. However, we do have Formula One racing at just possibly their most famous venue, their most storied venue, and that's in Monaco for the Grand Prix of Monte Carlo or whatever they call it, which is always good fun where they close off the streets in Monaco and race down there. So if you get a chance to watch that and you like Formula One at all, I advise you to take a look at that, and you might want to listen to the FormulaOneBlog.com podcast, because I'm sure they'll have an excellent wrap-up show about the Monaco Grand Prix. And let's see, MotoGP and World Superbike return the following weekend. World Superbike is going to be going to Miller Motorsports Park, and MotoGP is going to be going to Mugello. So we've got some good racing coming up here in the beginning of June. We're going into summer. We're going to be seeing some of those full-on European rounds, like I said, they're always so good to see. So we're looking forward to that. And, of course, we will bring you the details here on MotoGPOD. So I think that's going to about do it for today's show. And signing off for MotoGPOD, I am Bob Hayes.
KPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I am solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorner Sports SL, and the MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorner Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.